It's deja vu. This moment's happened before.
You have found the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this episode of the Kaleidoscope Gallery. I'm your host, Paul Edwards, and alongside contributors Dave, Autumn, Hans, and Leah, we will be exploring virtual reality and the metaverse, transhumanism, or human 2.0, and dreams and dreaming. So let's step into the first exhibit inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
For now, any flickering moral doubts about this technology remain hidden by its potential power and promise. Today, VR is still in its infancy. But as computers grow more powerful, the graphics more detailed, and the sensations more human, virtual reality will force us to ask, what is real? It will be up to our children to find the answer.
What kind of reality are our grandchildren going to accept? Is the natural world with real trees and real rivers going to be there? Or are we going to live in 800-story high-rises all plugged into our virtual realities in which we walk through artificial forests? This might be a turning point for the human race. We might be going inward towards an artificial experience.
In the clip you just heard, an American news report that aired in 1991 describes what was then a new technological phenomena: virtual reality over the internet. By strapping on a VR helmet attached to a computer and connected to the internet, one could enter into immersive virtual worlds and interact with other people's avatar or digital persona in cyberspace. At least, that was the theory in 1991. But with clunky and bulky headsets and primitive computer-generated graphics, VR failed to truly catch on with the general public. But today, virtual reality has advanced and VR experiences have become more immersive and more common. The popular Oculus Rift VR headset not only promises immersive VR video game worlds, but also as a way to connect with friends on social media or attend live concerts, all inside the metaverse, the current term to describe the virtual universe of virtual worlds. Then there is augmented reality, or AR, which overlays digital content and information onto the physical world as seen through your handheld device or even wearable glasses. What kind of impact will VR, AR, and the metaverse have on our everyday lives? Soon it may be common for most people to explore the metaverse for the occasional concert, video game, or to hang out with friends or lovers in virtual spaces, interacting as avatars. But is there a possibility that some of us might disappear into an increasingly immersive metaverse, preferring a virtual world to the real world? Will we be inundated by augmented reality advertising overlays on our AR glasses as we walk down the street? How do you think you will interact with the metaverse? Joining us to explore this exhibit inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery are contributors Dave, Autumn, and Hans.
Imagine you're in a purpose-built room, you know, like a padded room with
no features. It's just designed to have virtual reality experiences in. And you strap on the suit and you meet your partner in virtual reality cyberspace and you interact with each other. It could be quite compelling for some, I think.
That sounds awesome. I think you're understating it. I think that's where we're all going to end up, is in these little pods in virtual reality worlds. So you talk about the next step of lucid dreaming is like computer-enhanced lucid dreaming.
Wow.
And then suddenly you don't need to do the work and the practice to be in control of your dreams, because you can program it ahead of time and then lie back. And that's going to be probably the end of mankind. We'll all just be in these giant warehouses and these pods on our own trip, so to speak. But our bodies will turn to these like gray, floppy masses. So we won't even be able to meet in person anymore, because we're just totally unpresentable.
You know, when you're scrolling through certain things on your iPhone, specifically when you're setting the time on your alarm, for example, every time you move through an hour or a minute, it makes this little feedbacking vibration in your hand.
The haptic response, yeah.
Precisely, the haptics. Now, people are testing these haptic suits. So you put the suit on, and it's hooked up to a haptic system, which is to say a vibrational feedback system. And in virtual reality, now someone can stimulate your body using haptic feedback remotely in virtual reality.
Well, that's where everything's going with porn. This company, it was called, I forget what it was called, but they basically wire someone up, and then, no, you'd put a ring on, and it would pick up your pulse, and then someone else would hold a remote, like bobble heart, and the heart would vibrate to the beat of the other person's pulse. And they're like, where is this going? I'm like, this is porn.
Really, what the worst case scenario is, if this metaverse does happen, and it in the worst of ways, where, you know, AI has advanced and taken over humanity and has forced us into a virtual world to control us, right, and to control the planet, and so that, because it's programmed to protect us from ourselves, from destroying ourselves, right? So like, imagine that. Worst case scenario.
That picture that you just painted isn't out of the realm of possibility.
Some people are saying that, you know, it's, the feeling is wonderful, but it's a novelty. Like, it's not something that you'd remember very easily to do or want to do again. Like, you easily forget about it, right? I don't think everybody's going to be jumping on the bandwagon, right? So
yeah, so you don't necessarily believe that, you know, the idea of it being a completely immersive world in which you can, quote-unquote, live, and you can watch concerts, and you can have cyber sex with people, and you can hang out in these amazingly immersive environments. At the end of the day, they're just going to hang up their Oculus Rift and go out for a walk or something.
Yeah, exactly. We're not quite in a dystopian society where we have no other alternatives, right, to enjoying life or to being immersive in different ways. I see it as a novelty. I see it as a specific experience that doesn't quite, I don't see it as being that expansive or applicable to many things.
That's not what some people are saying. Some people want you to believe or think that the metaverse is the next evolution in human society.
I know, or the next, we're like, it's the next step for the internet, or I don't know. No, not really.
Yeah, so a little underwhelming.
Yeah, it's a bit, you know, it's, I mean, the CGI is not there. It's, the immersive environment is not quite there. Like, we're not, what would be more impressive would be holographic technology, right? And then, because at least it's
like like the holodeck.
Or like a holographic projection that, you know, where you can actually be projected holographically wherever you are and then in a virtual setting.
Speaking of the Star Trek TNG holodeck, and comparing it to Virgil, how many people on that spaceship there used it for sexual recreation?
One wonders.
Right. Was there some rule against programs like that on the holodeck? I don't know.
Oh, well.
Someone, some ensign is in there and he has, you know, a massive orgy.
I know, right? Who does that? Like, I mean, you must be a masochist.
The holodeck being somehow really immersive and convincing, but where that's not what putting an Oculus Rift on your face is going to do.
No, and it's like, I don't know, man. It's like the whole idea with virtual is really, it's for gaming. Like when you, I don't know, I'm not a gamer, but I've seen my friends game and they're into it because I can see that the graphics are kind of cool, but you know, and then the characters are actually, they look like they're real characters. There's a degree of hyper-realism to it. But the way we have the quote-unquote metaverse now, the way Facebook launched that, oh my God, those legless meeting rooms. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, like,
what is that?
So Facebook launched something. It like its version of like, its version of Zoom, right? But it's all virtual. It's Facebook's first attempt at the metaverse, right? And it's like, it's very like Donkey Kong.
So this is, you'd have to wear the Oculus Rift setup, and then you'd go into a virtual Zoom-like meeting.
Exactly. It's all in 3D, and you have no legs, and yeah, your avatars.
What do you mean no legs?
They're legless. It's weird. They're float. That's what I'm saying. It's
So the avatar that you have is a legless creature?
Yes, it's...
That's bizarre.
It's very bizarre.
It's called virtual reality, and as Jay Schaefer found out, all it takes is a special helmet and a glove, and you're off.
You're gone, John. You're history.
It's a computer-generated world.
I think the major malfunction with virtual reality right now, like eventually it's going to be a mass thing, is like you need to put this giant headset on, and you can't see what's going on around you. So you have to like sit in this chair like totally vulnerable. It's like kind of against human nature. And then like, oh, you want to like get up and cheer and like you're going to slam into a wall or... I mean, it's not practical.
One point you mentioned about how you like the idea as a musician of being able to basically, and a producer, to be able to make music from the beginning to end, and you don't have to worry about performing it live. You know, it's because you're just not that interested in doing the whole rehearsals and like all the grueling travel and like, you know, like there's a lot of work goes into putting on live shows, although they're amazing.
Yeah.
But what about if you could perform your live shows in the metaverse?
Yeah.
You know, you have people like come into your club or whatever it is, your virtual club, and you're at home where, you know, with your VR gear on and you're performing live. I guess your avatar would be what everyone would see.
It's like a novelty Twitch stream. I think like everything, I don't know, man, give it like 5 years, because like shit's gonna just be corny until then, you know what I mean? It's gonna be corny as fuck.
You've heard the terminology cyberspace, the web, hard drive, the internet. Today, we want to explore cybersex in cyberspace. My name is Jolie, and I'm going to show you how to enjoy the stimulating world of the internet sexual playground.
And then there's also the question of like virtual reality sex. There's a suit you can put on.
Okay.
And it's a haptic suit. You know, like haptics are when your phone buzzes, makes the vibration basically.
All right.
And so the idea is like you and your partner both have on these haptic suits, which basically vibrate. And so you can touch each other in virtual reality, but in real life, your suit will be vibrating. And so you can like.
Right. Yeah. I mean, man, people have been finding things to fuck forever. I'm not surprised. You know, the variations are vast.
Yeah. And do you think that there's any, like some people will sort of want to live in virtual reality and not, you know, get addicted maybe?
Yeah. I mean, like everybody is already like, it's just going to get worse.
Okay.
Drink your green smoothies and, you know, enjoy your sanity while you still have it. I don't know. Nobody plays outside anymore. It's the summer. Like, you know, shit. It was like 20 years ago. There's just kids running around their bikes, you know, cut scrapes. Now it's just like they're just on Discord and shit. Like, it's just what it is. No, everybody's like, we're already halfway there.
Okay.
When I was in high school, you got those kids who were like playing like Diablo,
a video game.
Yeah, like those shooter, not the ones where you like take over the, you have like a world and you like control things and like lots of battle armies and shit. And it was like, oh, this is a cool game, whatever. And it's boring as fuck. But then it's like, you'd be able to play online and you can play these games with other people. And then it's over. It's over. It's like, it doesn't even matter. The game doesn't even matter anymore. You know, the game can be subpar, but you're having that like experience of community or like convenience of not having to like see people or, you know, maybe have to deal with awkward circumstances. It's you can be in the comfort of your own home, right?
We've collaborated on music
many a times,
and there's a couple of ways that we do it in the same room, kind of in real time. Often you would come in with a kind of framework or an idea ahead of time. Like a vision of what you want to do. We'd set up the conditions for it.
Yeah.
And then we go back and forth with feedback. And the other way we'd collaborate is basically just online, where we'd send back and forth files and just chat about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say 80% of the time that the project was finished in person, almost, maybe with some of the remixes that we collaborated on, there was no in-person at all. It's like 100% online.
Right.
But I've been thinking recently about like the possibilities of virtual reality collaboration.
Yeah, I mean it's a thing. It's good. I mean it's as for, what do you mean like DAWs that are in like you'll be in a VR set like controlling a DAW inside.
Yeah, exactly. So imagine like you'd have to put on your Oculus Rift.
Sure.
Right? And then we enter the studio and we've got it designed the way we want. And with your hand gestures, you can grab samples off of a database that we can move the mixing sliders and, you know, kind of jam in virtual reality. I do think that would be quite interesting. And it might be like, it's not just remotely like we were doing before, like we're sending back and forth files. You're actually in the same space, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, it's like just another form of social engagement, maybe like a little more immersive feeling. Get your own avatar, I guess. Make yourself look like whatever you want. Yeah, it's like what's helpful. I mean, it's like what is helpful and what's gimmicky. Mm. You're not like it's kind of like it's a toss up. We'll see what happens. How intuitive can you get with like some shit that's like so meta? We'll see what happens. You know?
Yeah.
Would it be more productive? I'm not sure.
Everyone's LARPing like crazy.
What's that?
Live action role playing. They go out there in their costumes with their styrofoam swords and parks and like smack at them at each other. But it's like all fun and games. Like people come out of the forest with like giant styrofoam silver swords that smack each other with like balloon swords.
Can you imagine how much enhanced that would be by augmented reality?
Oh, that could be amazing. I think everyone got freaked out when they saw that Pokemon and the humans were all standing around those clusters.
That was really scary.
No one ever made another game like that.
But you know, that game has made a lot of money, Dave. It made over $1 billion in revenue.
I saw people get hooked on it.
The dream of the augmented reality, some of the augmented reality people, is that, you know, you and I were walking down the street, we have our glasses on, and on our glasses flash all sorts of advertisements and billboards appear in the augmented reality. Just, you know, they're not actually there. They're just on your glasses. And
oh my fucking God, what a nightmare. But yeah, the billboards in your eyes, like advertising is real, but it's, I don't know, it's heinous.
You are inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Most of us would consider the end of the human race as a catastrophe. There are some, however, who will not only rejoice at it, but want to hasten the day it arrives. Transhumanists look forward to a future in which Homo sapiens is superseded by a better, smarter, fitter model, humanity 2.0. Our lifespans are short, our final years usually characterized by diminishing health and vitality, often accompanied by a drop-off in cognitive capacity. Is this really the best we can hope for? Transhumanists think not. Aging could be stopped and even reversed. Enhancements could dramatically raise our IQs and make us stronger and fitter. We might even be able to leave our fragile bodies behind and upload ourselves to computers, living forever in virtual worlds. Improving humanity through science and technology could radically change us. Such a new beginning would in effect be the end of humanity as we know it. If the transhumanists are right, we could be one of the last generations of humans to roam the planet.
In the clip you just heard, philosopher Julian Baggini on the BBC web series Ideas describes transhumanism, a concept that suggests that with ongoing advancements in technology, human beings will inevitably evolve beyond our current limitations and emerge as human 2.0. Indeed, technologies like the gene editing tool CRISPR that allows for the replacement of faulty genes in newborns to create customized or designer children free of certain defects or with the preferred color of eye exists today. And continual advancements in anti-aging technologies seem to promise ever-increasing lifespans for humans. In the near future, we may see nanotechnology, microscopic programmable robots, work inside our body to repair damage as we go. Or cybernetic implants could allow us to interface with computers for instant access to all knowledge downloaded directly into your brain, making you super intelligent. Or perhaps we will integrate robotic implants that make us super strong. So
So is the future of human evolution a technological one? Are we witnessing the beginning of the end of human 1.0? To reflect on this exhibit, we are joined inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery by Dave, Autumn, and Leah. Are we seeing the emergence of a human 2.0, a technological evolution for humanity?
I think that we've been on a continual path that has been strongly informed by technological advancements. And now we're at a point where they're accelerating, and absolutely we're going to continue to evolve with the benefit of technology if we do it with the right intention of wanting to help one another improve each other's conditions so that we can live the most fulfilled and best possible versions of ourselves, no matter, you know, what's happening with us, whether we have mental or physical health conditions or different types of abilities or whatever the case may be. Where I have doubts and distrust and questions and concerns relate to when people are motivated to live forever for its own sake, out of a sense of fear, out of a, you know, I need to upload my brain because that's my whole self.
But what about the notion that eventually we'll lose our current humanity in the sense that we'll become something else? And we'll lose a lot of our imperfections, perhaps some of our mortality. What does that do to the human experience?
I question whether we can ever achieve perfection. I don't agree, and I distrust, as much as I distrust people's motivations being for immortality, I distrust it when their motivations are for perfection. I don't like the notion of people, you know, sort of picking and choosing and customizing their children. I do think CRISPR is an amazing technology. It can be used to do all sorts of wonderful things, just like stem cells. But it's being misdeployed when it's being used to try to achieve something that someone's defining as perfect, as what is perfect in the first place.
Brave New World.
Yeah. I don't agree with the notion of human 2.0. I think that technology has been such a benefit to us and continues to be, and we continue to innovate on it, and that we've evolved so many times that we're on to like human, like, I don't know, a million point oh. But so this notion of becoming a Borg type of character where, you know, you're mostly not flesh anymore, you're mostly tech machinery, whether they're nano or exoskeletal or whatever, that notion of a cyborg, I would call it, human that is superior, I question those assumptions that building a machine that's complex enough is inherently going to create something superior. Imperfection is what makes us try to improve, and it is therefore what makes us innovate technology. It's exactly our imperfection and our limitations, including our mortality, that make us evolve. It is that flawed nature that creates the dynamism that allows us to even come up with the idea of a cyborg being superior. We're perfectly flawed, and it is that paradox that plays out in ourselves and in nature that generates, operates, and destroys and renews continually in these cycles.
You indicated that you are quite interested in cybernetics.
Cyberization, yeah. Cyberization. I think if anything, if only for like the fantasy of, you know, of being wired and like having, and like literally wired to the point where you have access to like networks, right? And and a lot of information, and like your cyberized body can just, you know, download a program on Kung Fu or something silly, and you can actually do it, right? Or know how to pilot a helicopter or yada yada. So
right
so that's, it's all kind of, so be having a cyber brain essentially empowers you to have access to different programs and networks, right? So,
and at what point does that mean you're no longer human? Or has it, we look at evolution, human evolution, as a physical process, and but is in this case technology influencing an evolution to that point that we actually become almost a different species?
Yeah, I just wonder though, at what point do we start to, I start to also push back or kind of step back a little bit and go, well, really, okay, so that's, it sounds very fantastic, right? Like, because it's almost like proposing that, oh, you can have superpowers through cybernetics. But I mean, okay, but no.
But what about this, Autumn? If with the CRISPR technology, which is the gene editing technology, what if in 10 years from now, you and I witness the birth of the first human that has, I don't know, like bionic eyes or super strength?
Regenerative cells would be like wild. That would be like that right? That's self-healing right there. And yeah, self-regeneration. So yeah, I agree. And I think you'll make a very good point with DNA and genetic engineering. Absolutely. It can be done, like Gattaca, right? But in like a more like intense way, where they're actually cultivating humans to be like resistant to, I don't know, to space.
And you contrast that with the idea that as more and more technologies come online, like those genetic editing tools, CRISPR, nanotechnology, AI and robotics, that we will modify our own body to become superhuman, to become transhuman, to become posthuman. So if we have these amazing human 2.0 bodies, why would we want to be in virtual reality when I guess we'd be gods on Earth?
That technology is there. The main barrier is its population. Like, how do you decide who gets to live on? Because not everybody can. Or you have to cut off reproduction.
Ooh.
And then it's just the same people.
Yeah.
For eternity. Like Donald Trump would always be alive. So even though I think we do have the technology and the medical know-how to live forever, everybody knows it's just not a great idea. But there's at least, you know, 20 or 30% of the population that check that. 80 to 90% of the population that'll, if it was possible and they had the means to pull it off, they'd do it, because once you've been around for 900 years, you go into a bar, like boom, 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 whatever you wanted out of that night is coming your way. You're like, both your hips are made of titanium, your skin is a graphene projection. Your eyes are like just iPhone camera with LiDAR. Yeah, I got LiDAR transitions, so they turn into sunglasses when it's bright outside.
You are listening to The Kaleidoscope Gallery. The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
I kept thinking while I was dreaming that all this meant something. That there was some other meaning in it that I ought to find out. I can't make out just what sort of a place it was. It seemed to be a gambling house. But there weren't any walls, just a lot of curtains with eyes painted on them. I was sitting there playing cards with a man who had a beard. I was dealing to him, and I turned up a seven of clubs. He said, "That makes 21. I win." When he turned up his cards, they were blank. Then I saw the proprietor again, the man in the mask. He was hiding behind a tall chimney, and he had a small wheel in his hand. I saw him drop the wheel on the roof. Suddenly, I was running. Then I heard something beating over my head. It was a great pair of wings. The wings chased me and almost caught up with me when I came to the bottom of the hill. I must have escaped. I don't remember.
That clip you just heard was from the 1945 Alfred Hitchcock film, Spellbound, where the character played by Gregory Peck recalls a dream he had to a psychiatrist who later attempts to interpret the meaning of the dream. When we enter the REM state of sleep, we dream many times a night. But most of us arise the next day with perhaps a vague impression of the dream or even no memory of the dream at all. Yet, we have all had some dreams we will never forget. Flying dreams, bizarre psychedelic dreams, nightmares, dreams about work, sex, violence, inexplicable joy, wild landscapes, deceased loved ones, recurring dreams, lucid dreams. 20th century psychologist Carl Jung describe dreams as the subconscious mind speaking to us in a welling up of symbols, archetypes, and dream imagery. And, he says, a careful observation of our dreams can lead to an interpretation of what our subconscious is really trying to tell us. To dream with us inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery, we are joined again by Dave and Leah.
Last time we were talking, near the end of the conversation, I brought up dreams, the act of dreaming. And you mentioned to me that you have experimented with lucid dreaming.
Yes.
Now, I don't really know what lucid dreaming is.
It's a state of half wake, half sleep, half conscious, half unconscious, where if you allow the conscious part of your mind to take active control of your unconscious mind, you can begin to control your dreams. You can travel across multiple planes of light, color, memories, floating, flying, sinking, falling, pretty much everywhere you've ever lived in every lifetime, in any lifetime.
So this sounds different than just having an amazing dream. You're saying, okay, part of you can create a narrative or decide what's going to happen next while you're dreaming, kind of, or
it's a practice, which must, like anything, be perfected to have that full control that you speak of here. So, for example, now I could turn my dream to a mountainscape or a favored destination, but I could not do what the lucid dreaming masters can do, which is to literally appear in other times and places, to eat and drink, fornicate. Imagine having a full fire spit roast on the plains of Central America during the height of the Aztec rule. That could be possible if you take enough naps.
When you're napping, it's easier to have lucid dreams as opposed to when you're deep sleeping, or...
Yes. It's that semi-sleep, super semi-sleep.
Right, the liminal state between consciousness and unconsciousness. And so you're saying there's part of you that's still aware.
But not really. But there's a part of you that's still aware.
And do you use your imagination to create this dream landscape, or?
Is it your imagination, or is it something bigger?
And do you still use lucid dreaming? Do you still practice lucid dreaming?
I do, but it's not a conscious effort. I'm going to go practice my lucid dreaming.
Right.
It's like, I need a nap. And I lie down, and I'm like, oh, I'm kind of in a lucid dream, and I can like work out, like I can work out a problem in a dream, or I can take my mind to a different place, or back to a favorite location.
And during this mental state, this lucid dreaming state, can you enter other people's minds or dreams?
Are you talking about astral projection? Yes, it is entirely possible. You're not supposed to know about that, but absolutely.
Leah, are you someone that easily remembers your dreams?
Short answer is no. I do not easily remember my dreams. I remember my dreams when I wake up from them, but the ones I remember over the long term are ones that have some kind of special quality to them that make me remember them. They're highly symbolic, highly archetypal, and oftentimes related to ancestry, past lives, or just that sort of thing. Feels like that sort of thing.
Do you have a dream that sticks with you, that you remember, that you might be able to share now?
Yeah, there's one that relates to that ancestry and feeling of past lives, and but also of a dreamscape that you can visit in different dreams and recognize, which was a very unique experience. So the one dream, it involved me in a jungle that half of my ancestry is from the Philippines, and so it felt like the Philippines jungle, and I was being chased by Japanese, Spanish, and Spanish soldiers. And so the Japanese and the Spanish are both, there's history there with the Philippines, Japan during the Second World War, Spain, colonial history. And I was running from them through the jungle I came upon a really old, abandoned, decrepit, small building that was on the edge of a river ridge, or cliff almost. It was cliff, really. And this building was actually so decrepit and old, and the way it had been built, it was half of it was breaking over the edge of this cliff, and I was having to crawl on my hands and knees to sort of hide away from these soldiers that were hunting me down to get into this building. I was crawling on my hands and knees, hoping I wouldn't, you know, fall into this river. And then the next scene in my dream, it was kind of a quick cut as I remembered anyways. I'm walking in the river that I saw, and I'm walking with a line of women and children. Or all of us are walking down this river, and the river is unusual in that it has two different flow directions. I'm walking on one side, and on the other side, it flows in the opposite direction. And in the middle of it is all this detritus, and the detritus is the detritus of humanity. Like, I'm seeing dead babies in there, and like, it's all sorts of ancient human detritus.
Do you mean like remains of
civilization? And also, yeah, past? Like, yes, and also just stuff from dead stuff from the jungle. We're all women and children, and we're walking, and there's a lot of, there's a visual of people in their skirts. It's like refugees. It's been an emergency, and they're in single file. And then the next cut is that the river has become wide. It's still in two directions. It flows in two directions. And it's like going into the mouth of something bigger, but you can't see what that something bigger is. It's very built up, man-made. It's almost like a bridge of some sort that's very concrete and urban that's in front. And then where I'm going up on it, there's a depression in it. So, and all this water is collected in it. And in that water is all of this, it's almost like a bog. You know, they find all of these perfect Celtic remains and things and people and stuff in bogs. Imagine it's almost like a kind of bog where there's all of this preservation of human history and ancestry and people's faces staring up. And I'm having to get to a person who's standing there. It's almost like on an island. This is almost like a kind of, you know, river, and these are stones you have to jump over. But it's in this very urban location on the side of this river. And so I'm having to jump from place to place over these faces and medallions and, you know, ancient costumes that people are wearing and things preserved in this kind of, you know, transparent lake bog sort of thing, in order to get to this gentleman who is standing there. I don't remember more than that. So the dream ends pretty much there. And then there's a second dream that I have many years later. I don't know how long. I won't give the stories of the dream, the story of the dream. But at the end of it, as I remember it, I end up on the other side of that river at that embankment.
So you had a second dream, but you had, it also contained that river that flowed in both directions.
Yes. And I recognize the dream location of that place on the river, like where I'd met the man. I was on the other side of the river, and I got there in my dream, and I said, oh, hey, this is the other side of that same river from my other dream. I recognize it from this side. Yeah, it was a really unusual, and you could see the sort of the forest or the jungle like leading up to that area on the side of the river too. So it was a second dream years later in which I recognized the location, but from the opposite bank of the river.
Carl Jung spoke about dreams being our subconscious mind communicating with our conscious mind with archetypal symbols and patterns in an attempt to kind of communicate with us about, I suppose, our deeper thoughts and experiences. How do you interpret those symbols in your dream?
Human history, colonial history. When I was first running through the jungle, it felt like I was in my grandfather's shoes or in my ancestor's experience of being pursued, you know, of being. And so it felt like an experience of other people's, but it was me in my dream. So I feel like it started out as a kind of personal, colonial, ancestral blood memory dream. And it ended up being more about the archaeology of unearthing pre-colonial history. It was like seeing into our human history and all of the lost potential, and but also the memory.
And a kind of eerie beauty, a terrifying beauty.
Are dreams something we experience in our minds and in our brains, or is there a kind of quantum space or some other dimension in which you experience a dream verse, if you like, or a dream place? Because I'll tell you about a dream I had, a reoccurring dream, but that evolved over four dreams. So the dream would start, and a little bit into it, I would end, I'd wake up. A couple months later, this dream would start up again, but it would move along further in the dream. Until finally the fourth dream, it completed.
It's like a miniseries.
Yeah. It was like a mini series, and having a reoccurring dream alone is quite interesting, but having it unfold over time, and what was interesting about it is the first time I had the dream was predictive of the future. The second time I had the dream is when that future had already happened and begun, and then it continued on until a conclusion that hasn't actually happened in my life yet, but it looks like it's going to. As far as my life is unfolding right now. So this...
Now do you... So wait a minute. Is this dreams or... What's happening?
So the first dream, it was about... Leah's family was involved. My partner Leah's family was involved. This is before I met Leah.
Oh.
Yeah. And then after I met Leah, the dream continued on further. And it follows a parallel of my actual life path, but the fourth iteration of the dream has not happened to me in real life yet, fully. But it looks like it's going to. So this...
What do you mean, it looks like it's going to?
Well, in the fourth iteration of this reoccurring dream, it concluded in such a way that it would I would have to be an older person than I am right now. For the dream to...
I see.
You see? So, but everything else that was in this dream has happened. Here's something amazing about the dream. The dream would always involve me walking along a beach at one stage. I would walk down to the beach, take a left, and walk a long walk and end up at this house on the beach. It's symbolic in this dream, and I won't go into those details, but the fourth time I had the dream, the fourth time I'm walking down towards the beach... to take a left, to walk down the beach, I look at the right-hand side. For the first time in this series of dreams, and the right-hand side was an unrendered blank.
An unrendered blank?
Yes. There is no need to create an illusion of a dream space on the right-hand side of the picture, because that right-hand side had no place in the dream. So it's almost as if it's like a video game, a part of a video game that just isn't rendered because it's just not part of the game. You know, you bump into a wall and it just... There's nothing on the other side of that wall.
Interesting.
Now, this is what I thought to myself. I'm having the fourth dream. I'm becoming somewhat aware of the dream, like saying, I know I've had this before.
Now, did you become aware while you were dreaming or after you woke up?
While I was dreaming.
Okay, now you're talking.
So I became aware while I was dreaming. That's what I saw. Oh, I guess in this dream place, they don't have to let the holodeck. They don't have to render
everything.
The right-hand side. I could even see it kind of glitch in and out. And I thought to myself in a dream, this seems like a computer simulation. Or like a kind of holodeck. And that's what it began to question, whether or not some dreams take place in a kind of holodeck.
It sure feels like that because... But what you're saying is an example of lucid dream.
Before we part, let me leave you with an excerpt from a poem by the Persian medieval poet Rumi, entitled "The Dream That Must Be Interpreted." Humankind is being led along an evolving course through this migration of intelligences. And though we may seem to be sleeping, there is an inner wakefulness that directs the dream. And that will eventually startle us back to the truth of who we are. I hope you've enjoyed this excursion through the Kaleidoscope Gallery. Until next time, and remember, keep it surreal.
You have been listening to the many colors of the Kaleidoscope Gallery.